I don't know what episode we're on. Happy Thanksgiving from the Stone Creek Coffee Podcast. We are actually recording on Thanksgiving Day. You're going to be hearing this 3 days from now, I guess, on Monday. I'm actually kind of happy to be spending my Thanksgiving morning / noon sitting in the basement drinking beer and talking coffee. Nice break from the norm of the work week.
Same here. I get a chance to do podcasts, and after this, I'm roasting a bunch of coffee for our case study and our Green Black Espresso. So it's a fun day, just kind of focus on coffee, and I get to really do the things I'm thankful for, which is working with amazing coffee and talking about coffee passionate things.
I've been playing around with some of our stuff this week. And we have so many amazing coffees. Like, I would be really happy just drinking a lot of, or any of the coffees by themselves. But Joel, our lab roaster, has been doing some profiling on a Yellow Cultura Natural from Guatemala that will be running in January. And then we have this coffee out now from Colombia called Las Lunas, which is incredible. And so I really like them both separately. And then I was actually blending them. I was just taking some out of our production stock and working on a blend for my own enjoyment, because sometimes the deepness of a natural is just like really intense to drink a lot of, but I really like the rich kind of blueberry fruitiness. And then the Las Lunas is a high acidity coffee. I really just a fantastic coffee from Colombia, and I thought if I could incorporate some of the acidity from that in with the natural, it'd make a killer cup. And I was digging it. I gave some to Joel, and he actually was like, it's okay.
He's always like that, though. Like, his first time he tastes something, like, I don't really like this. And then he tastes it again, like, oh, now I get what you're talking about. It's funny.
I was thinking we should actually potentially maybe do a lab series coffee, which is a blend. So take two super unique coffees and try and blend them together into something that's like just crazy unique or crazy awesome. And those two coffees, I thought, actually really just the highlights of both ends of the spectrum came together to form an awesome coffee.
# spoilers, look for that this February.
Are we doing that?
Yeah.
Cool. So I didn't even know that, which is exciting. So coming off of that, a lot of the work we do hits pretty much every end of the coffee geek spectrum. So whether you're on the super experimental, light roast, single origin, ristretto espresso, or if you're more of the conventional large latte, dark roast, cream and sugar, like, we do a lot of work on every single end of the spectrum. And one thing we're pretty proud of is how we approach the dark roast. And that's what we're going to talk about today, is try and show the listener some of the history behind the dark roast, some of the perceptions that people have. We want to kind of illuminate those so people can move past them in terms of their appreciation for the dark roast, or their ability to just understand what it is and how it sort of plays in a coffee shop's lineup. So let's start with history. And coffee roasting, like, it just wasn't really tracked really well. We don't have a 100-year history on the philosophy of coffee roasting. But the certain taste profile that comes out of a dark roast coffee is really synonymous with one roaster in particular starting in the 1960s.
Yeah, that you're talking about Alfred Peet, and you probably are familiar with Peet's coffee. You've heard that term before. So he went to Italy and learned that the basic Italian dark roast style. And the Italians dark roasted their coffee, one, because they liked it that way, but two, because they were importing really bad coffee from Africa and all over the world. And it kind of started back in the 1500s, 1600s when you're putting coffee on leaky ships and they're getting weird things happen to the green coffee. You get it, it doesn't taste right. What do? You roast it dark, you cover it up, and boom, you have a coffee that works. And what Alfred Peet did, he learned that style, but he got so upset that during, like, the 1950s, 1960s, like, post-World War II, like, coffee in America just went to crap. Like, it was really, really bad coffee that everyone was importing. So he took this Italian roast style and he said, screw it, I'm going to roast great coffee. So I'm going to source great coffees, but I'm going to roast them really well. And all of a sudden, Peet's kind of blew up. In fact, the people who eventually made Starbucks went to Peet and said, hey, teach us your roasting style. We want to learn this. And that's kind of why you see the explosion of dark roast today, is because two of the major players in dark roasting started really heavy back in the early 1960s, 1970s. They really blew up. Mm. They blew up with second wave coffee, and then all of a sudden you see dark roast kind of expand across the United States, and that kind of takes the prime driver's seat in specialty coffee for a long time. I'd say it's probably the last 20 years or so that folks have really started to experiment with lighter roasts. And you have some people who are quote-unquote coffee purists that believe it's only light roasts that really showcase the true flavor of the coffee. I was in that camp for a little bit until I got challenged to do some dark roasting and kind of have to do that here. And I learned that there's a place for it, and there's a major craft on it. And if you can do that well, it's something really special.
Yeah, we'll parse that out here a little bit more in a minute. But I want to go back to sort of the impact that Starbucks and Pete's had on the palates of American coffee drinkers. Because I think because they were so well known for dark roast, I think that actually influenced people's perception of what was good coffee. Like, good coffee / strong coffee is dark roasted, because most of people's experiences with coffee before Starbucks and Pete's had been around weak, home-brewed, you know, crappy electric drippers, and so all they'd had is just weak, bitter coffee from their grandparents until they are exposed to the sort of new world of Starbucks and Pete's. And for some of us, that was the 70s. For others of us, it was the 90s, but it still really influenced our perception of, hey, what is good coffee? Because, let's be honest, even something that specialty coffee may poo-poo on, like Pete's or Starbucks, is infinitely better than some of the crap we all grew up with. My point is that people started to taste this coffee that was better, and they understood it to be strong and dark. So that's what now they really equate good coffee with.
Yeah, it's a curse and a blessing, because those of us that grew up on really bad coffee, my first iteration with coffee was instant crystals that we had around, and put that with a little bit of Hershey syrup and milk and shook it up, and that was great, but that isn't good tasting coffee, but it's not really strong or dark either. And so you have this dichotomy of people who think, oh, good coffee must be strong and dark, I don't like good coffee. And so they don't go into coffee shops. But then you have the other half of people that really like that, and they don't really want to try anything new. I don't know where I was going with that, but it was kind of like a
brain dump. But no, I think I can take it, actually. Is when you work in cafe, you get people who come into your cafe and they want dark roast. Like, they don't even know what it means, and that's okay. It's just that a little ignorant or naive. But because of what they perceive to be good, they ask for that. Hey, I want the dark roast.
Or strong. Right. Or bold. And all these terms that they associate with good coffee, but they don't really mean anything.
Right. And it's not that they don't mean anything. They mean something really particular. They just don't know what they mean. But the terms themselves don't mean anything. And I think the one you said, bold, I hear that one a lot, heard it a lot. And I think it's probably one of the most destructive terms in coffee, because it is so ambiguous. What people mean is they want something that's really, really flavorful, generally, I think. I mean, there are certainly people, because of their exposure to Starbucks and Pete's, their palates are in tune to the roasty, carbony, chocolatey flavors in a dark roast. And because it's familiar, that's what they like and that's what they want. For other people, they just want something that's rich and flavorful and well-brewed, and to them, their only experience to get close to that is the dark roast. Because of their understanding and perception of the terms, they're really actually leaving out a lot of the coffee spectrum, but it's not their fault. They just don't realize it.
To be fair, those people that really look for that dark roast, bold flavor, quote-unquote, there are a lot of really big flavors that are found in dark roasted coffee scientifically. You take these things that taste like tobacco, taste like charcoal, coal, like smoke, dark cassis, black currant, all these really big, bold flavors that come out during the deeper roast. And the same thing can be said when you're like cooking on a grill. Like, there's some darker flavors that come out when you use a lot of heat and really change the chemical structure of the coffee or food, for that matter.
Yeah, and because of those bold flavors, because dark roast possessed those bold flavors, you see actually a lot of similarity between people who like certain kinds of foods and the kinds of coffee they drink. So people who tend to like, or who have, I would say, a more dull palate, they're just not as sensitive. They like spicy food, really intense. You know, like they get the mega hot wings at Buffalo Wild Wings.
And by dull palate, what we really mean is that they actually have less taste buds. It's not a judgment. It's a fact. Like, there are certain people that have more taste buds and certain people that have less taste buds. And those that have less taste buds look for more extreme flavors because they need stuff to feel. Think of your mom or dad or grandma or grandpa who go to the restaurant, and before they even taste their food, they dump a bunch of salt on it. It's not because they love salt. It's just that's the kind of intensity they need to feel because they have less taste buds.
Hmm. And it's actually remarkable that the science behind this is you generally see, and this is generalization warning, men tend to have less sensitive palates than women, generally. And that's why you tend to see men liking spicier food, men really being all into the dark roast, whereas women tend to have a higher level of sensitivity. And we actually have a super taster. We're pretty sure we have a super taster working upstairs as our design coordinator, Kim. And the super tasters, with that sensitivity, try and go for something more mellow. So even a low acidity, low carbon level, higher sweetness. So sometimes they'll just forego black coffee altogether, and that's when you start adding sugar and sweetness to try and mellow those flavors out because they're so dang sensitive to the flavor profiles of coffee, spicy food, bitterness. They don't like bitter beers, stuff like that.
Yeah, Kim only drinks coffee every once in a while. We brew coffee for every ops meeting we have on Mondays, and I usually see her bowls of coffee sitting full at the end of the meeting. And we also have Chili Thursdays, and Kim never eats Chili Thursday because it's too intense. It's too much for her.
Yeah, and it has nothing, like, it's just science is all, and we're all different. Like, we all have a different palate. We all have different preferences. What we understand is that there are a lot of people who love coffee, and they love the different manifestations of coffee, the different flavor profiles, and they're all somewhere in the spectrum. And actually, very few of us can appreciate the whole spectrum just because of our palates, not because we're enlightened, not because we're connoisseurs, but because we have a palate that's accepting of a lot of different flavors. And that's really important for us to remember, and for baristas to know in the specialty coffee industry to keep in mind. That if you work in the industry, odds are pretty good you're going to be more accepting to the different things out there, but you are likely going to have a lower tolerance level to those who are different from you. And we talk about this on the podcast a lot, the stigma behind the barista and our constant effort to push that down and to really be an accessible experience.
Yeah, it's really important for a barista behind the counter to not just like push out their own preferences, and we would be having people slinging natural processed coffees or really acidic coffees, is to be understanding, learn what other people geek out about, and try to be an ambassador for the coffee that we sell and really find, you know, coffee products that really fit. And it's really hard, I think, for a barista who gets really caught up in barista competitions or would just kind of push those products, but you really start to alienate your customer base. And we've had a couple cafes where we had baristas that were really like this, and we start to see the bean sales slowly go down, and it shows an alarm for us because while they might be really excited about that product and really excited about these really trendy things, it's not necessarily what every customer is going to look for. Maybe 10% of the customer base will be coming in looking for those high-end products, and that's approximately how much of that kind of coffee we sell. Most of them are just looking for an interesting, acceptable, like what they're looking for in terms of palate. It could be a dark roast. It could be an accessible roast. And it's really important for the baristas to understand that. And the more they understand the mind of the customer and what the palate of the customer is, the easier it is for them to kind of make a connection and really make a sale.
Yeah, and I think the most important thing for them to keep in mind is just where they've come from. Because, like, none of us started drinking high-end specialty coffee. That's not how we fell in love with coffee. So, like, don't get your head so far up your butt that you forget, like, where you started. And people are on the same place you were in the spectrum. So just be sensitive and really caring, like, and Christian kind of disclosed, yeah, every company struggles with trying to develop a culture of accessibility and customer service, in specialty coffee because you're so passionate about what you're doing. You're so passionate about learning and pushing things forward and trying new things that if you're not careful, you can really, you can ostracize people and you can scare customers away. And it's important to keep that in mind for a coffee company. And we think about that often is we want to create that environment that is accessible, that's teaching, that's caring, and that really lets everybody be a coffee geek. Everybody come in where they're at with the palate they have and learn about coffee and celebrate it with us.
So should we talk a little bit about how we do dark roast?
Yeah, let's talk about how we do dark roast.
All right. So we have a unique philosophy here at Stone Creek that we want all of our coffees to be sweet, clean, and juicy. And I always add the spicy characteristic to the dark roast. I'm always looking for a little bit of interesting spice. And spice could be clove, it could be cinnamon, it could be tobacco or something like that. But something that's really pleasant. And what's unique is a lot of coffees don't take dark roasts well. But there are a lot of coffees that do. And so it takes a little bit to kind of pare down through what you have available and to really find the flavor notes that work well as a dark roast. And we take the same initial profile that we do on most of our regular roasts at the start of the roasting. So a lot of times, if I have a light roast or a medium roast, I'll use that as kind of the base curve. And what we do towards the end of the roast, full disclosure, we're talking about our roasting principles. This is kind of a bad thing to do in the roasting industry, but whatever, try to replicate it, go for it. We tend to close down the air towards the end of the roast, and that allows us to close down the air, which kind of leaves the smoke in the roaster. But what it does is it speeds up the roast at the end of it. And as our owner, Eric, likes to talk about it, it's like putting a sear on the outside of the bean. We really do kind of caramelize and carbonize a little bit, but carbonize in a good way, like the carbon on your grilled meat is, or grilled vegetables if you're vegetarian. We're all inclusive here. just thinking about the turkey I'm making later.
Yeah. It's going to be good.
Yeah. But we do that to our coffee, and it tends to be a faster dark roast. We used to do it in a way that was kind of low and slow, but you tend to get these really bakey. You lose a lot of the fruit and the sweetness and a little bit of acidity, which you like to have in your dark roasted coffees. Mm-hmm. And depending on what origin you use for your dark roast, you can get really cool, like citrus type, like really deep dark citrus acidities on dark roast. We have some Colombias that we're playing with right now that have that. It kind of smells like grapefruit when you open up the dark roast. It's pretty cool. If you do like in Ethiopia, you can get some really cool phosphoric acid in your darker roasts. And Central America's just tend to be really accessible. We tend to like doing a Guatemala or South American Brazils take dark roast pretty well too. And they develop these really nice, sweet, chocolatey, spicy flavors. But as long as it maintains that sweet, clean, juicy, and spicy characteristic, that's really what we're looking for when we do a dark roast.
Yeah, and it's about really learning what coffees play well, what coffees really accomplish, as Christian said, what you want, because some will be great as a dark roast and some not so much. But understanding that your customers want that. Very rare is the specialty coffee roaster that can get by just on the cutting edge of the market. Like, the cutting edge of the market, the high-end specialty coffee market, is like 2% of coffee shop goers. Really hard to build a business. Some financial disclosure, because we're just feeling open and free today. We have three lines of coffee that we sell. Our classic line, which is pretty much what it sounds like. It's really accessible coffees that we carry year-round. So it's blends. It's our Cream City blend, Milwaukee, our French roast, our Black Sheep. And they are blends of coffees, but we are so intentional about those coffees as our biggest sellers and as coffee geeks that we really refer to them as compositions. There's a level of intentionality that goes beyond the, oh, I just have all this coffee left over, I'm going to just throw it into the blend. That's not how we roll. So that's one area, and that's our biggest aspect of coffee sales. The second, our seasonal line, which is five or six coffees that we have in right now that are really, really fresh that we want to show to the customers as single origins. Finally, we have our lab series, which the whole mantra behind the lab series is to be unique. That's for the 2% of the total market, the 10% of our customers who want to try something kind of crazy, something they've never had before, and we like to play around like that, so we're going to offer that product as well. And by offering all of those things, we really kind of hit the whole market. But if our least favorite thing to deal with is the classic series, then we're actually, I'd say we're not really coffee geeks at that point. We've become coffee snobs because we're not willing to teach and hit the market where it's at.
I source coffees that are as good or better than what we put in our lab line sometimes for our classic line because they deserve coffee that is just as good. It's just that we take a different route. We take a different profile on those coffees. But right now, like, Milwaukee is built on dark roasted coffee.
Absolutely.
And you can't just ignore your customer base. Dark roasts are awesome too. And if your customers love them, you should do them.
And you mentioned Milwaukee being skewed to dark roast. That's partially because of us, actually. So, like, for years and years and years and years and years, 20 years, Stone Creek really built our brand on that dark roast extravaganza, that fandom. And even when I came into the company about 2 years ago, the bulk of our coffees were on the darker end, and that was even after you had taken over as director of coffee. And we've really evolved because of what we're passionate about. But again, we're trying to meet the whole market where they're at and provide that coffee geek, farm to cup, direct sourced product for everybody who loves coffee. So today's Thanksgiving. We're rolling into the holidays. We're trying to be sensitive to the entire market. So last week we released our Santa's Revenge, which is a pretty dope name for a coffee. And occasionally we like to really have some fun with how we name coffees. Bone Shaker, Ring of Fire, Santa's Revenge. And Santa's Revenge is a seasonal composition, a blend of different coffees that we've created for a really specific purpose and roasted in a really specific way. Kristen, tell us about Santa's Revenge 2015.
Well, Santa's Revenge is kind of a fun play on roasting because the majority of the coffee is actually not a dark roast. It's kind of a medium light roast. But the fun thing about Santa's Revenge, and we put on the flavor notes, sugar plum, clove, cocoa nibs, your classic kind of darker roast flavors. We put coal on there just kind of as a fun thing. It doesn't actually taste like coal, but what we're trying to do is to make these little, like, pockets of really dark roasted coffee, and I took a Guatemala to a very dark place, and the distillate, like, that really dark flavor kind of works and meshes in with the light roast to make a really interesting, intricate, there's a little bit of acidity, but really nice dark flavor to it. It's only 25% of a dark roast. 75% of it is a light roast. But it's a really cool play on using a dark roast in an interesting and unique way. And I think all of our dark roast drinkers and a handful of our light roast drinkers would probably love this coffee as well. I like it.
So which coffee did you take dark?
I took an organic Guatemala dark, and the lighter composition component is a Kenya AB.
So why those two coffees?
So Guatemala tends to work well as a dark roast. It develops these really rich, chocolatey, sweet, a little bit of spicy characteristics to it, but the Kenya, when it's roasted a little lighter, has a really nice kind of malic acidity, so like apple-like, citrus-like, and really caramely in body, so it has a good viscosity. But you pair those two together, you get the distillate, that really big, it's almost like putting a little bit of char on a creme brulee. Just a little bit of that bitter goes a long way and really adds the characteristic of the cup. But the majority of it is that really sweet kind of balance characteristic to it as well.
The philosophy around a lot of our composition and roasting is to bring a balance to the cup that meets the customer. So I'll reminisce for a little bit. I got a 2.5-pound bag of French roast from Starbucks when I was in grad school because we were poor. Well, we weren't poor. We were broke, but we weren't poor. So it was like this food donation program, and Starbucks had old French roast, so I got this 2.5-pound bag of old Starbucks French roast, and I was just amazed at how dark that was. Like, it tasted like charcoal. Just and back then I was a lot more into dark roast, and I was not digging that because it was all carbon. Like, there wasn't a lot of sweetness, there wasn't much fruit, there was no acidity. Which is fine. I mean, if that's what you're into, but it wasn't really, like, I wasn't digging it, and that's not how Stone Creek approaches dark roast. We try and create things that are balanced, that aren't all one single note. Because if you just have one single note, again, the only people you're going to appeal to are the people who dig that note. So even our French roast, as it exists today, is just really nice. Like, it is dark, it's roasty, it's toasty, it's warming, it's, I think, great with pie. But then we try and balance that out with a sweetness and then a kind of a deep dry fruit undertone.
Undertone. I like undertone. Underbelly is not a bad term either.
But not many people say this has an underbelly of dried fruit. But that balance is the thing we really try and shoot for in those compositions so that we produce a product that at the end of the day we're happy with and we think everybody, or pretty much anybody else, will be happy with too. So to close it out, we'll wrap our discussion on dark roast by really challenging people to open your freaking mind. And that's really directed at the specialty coffee industry. Is you go from one spectrum of like, hey, I grew up on nothing but dark roast, or my exposure to good coffee was nothing but dark roast, and I'm going to swing to the opposite side of the spectrum where it's all really edgy, super light roasted, like to the point where it almost tastes like a salad, a romaine heart with some intense acidity. And they've completely sort of neglected where they came from, the benefits of a dark roast, the positive like flavor aspects. When in actuality, if you just be open to the spectrum, like in beer, everything from a stout to an amber lager, or even a pale ale, you're going to encounter a lot more unique flavors. You're going to build your palate, and you're going to learn to appreciate a lot more things.
Well said. Well said.
Thanks. I was passionate about that. And that's really, that was a challenge I sort of gave myself about 9 months ago, was I had stopped drinking the drip coffee that we offer here at Stone Creek, and I was only brewing V60s of our like lab series and high-end stuff, and I was just thinking like I need to be more well-rounded in my palate building. So about half the week now I'll just go downstairs to our factory cafe and grab whatever they're brewing and drink that, and it's always amazing. It's just, it may not be what I would naturally prefer based on my palate.
You know, it also feels pretty good when you, like, you find a really awesome lab coffee, like a Pacamara from Guatemala. You're brewing it on a V6, you take a sip, and you're like, damn, that's good. That's really good. But then when you go down to the COD and have the coffee of the day, like, just drip brew, and you pull some French roast or a black sheep, and you taste it, and like, damn, that's good too. It's a really good feeling to know that you have that kind of versatility. And you know your customers are probably thinking the same thing, like, hey, every time I get a coffee on this brew, it's really good. And I think that is a sign of success.
Mm. So home drinker, as you approach the dark roast, odds are pretty good if you brew at home, especially if you use a drip brewer. I'm going to say 80% of people who use drip brewers are brewing a medium or a dark roasted coffee just because that's, enjoy it. I hope you enjoy it. But I would ask you, what do you enjoy about it? So think through as you drink your coffee, like, what do I like about this? Is it the roasty toastiness? And, like, you just live for that roasty toasty, chocolatey, smoky flavor profile in the coffee? Cool, because then you've learned that you really like intense flavors, and I'm going to bet you probably like spicy food as well. If you really like some of the fruitiness, if you like kind of a sparkling, juicy mouthfeel that you get in some of your dark roasts, odds are pretty good you'll be all about that medium to light roast if it's brewed well. And I think what probably keeps you back from trying those lighter, edgier coffees is that you've come to a custom light roast with weaker coffee, which in a lot of cases, that's what you've experienced either at a diner cafe or on the Folgers thing that says medium or light, when in actuality, the coffee's not brewed strong enough. And in all truthfulness, you have to use a little bit more of a light roasted coffee in order to get a TDS, which is a total dissolved solids, in your final brew that equals a lesser use of coffee for a dark roast. So just up your dose of coffee, you're going to get a nice full flavor profile, you're going to have rich flavors that kind of blow you away, and you'll never have realized what that coffee, or you have never realized likely what coffee can be, like some of the flavors you'll find in coffee.
I'm going to make a generalization because I'm feeling the generalization here too.
Yeah.
Dark roasts are like casseroles. Like, everyone loves a casserole. It's pretty easy to make a casserole. Like, it's your kind of all day, like, really accessible food, and it really doesn't. It doesn't take a lot of energy to brew it well. Like, dark roasts are really easy.
That's true.
And as you go lighter on the spectrum, you're going into more and more complicated, by analogy, preparation of food. So maybe your medium roast is like a really basic Italian dish, but you have to take your components and look at them a little bit more, like, uniquely. But if you go to a super light roast, it's almost like really high-end French cooking. Like, you have to use the right water, the right ratio, the right grind size, and you have to have everything lining up, otherwise it doesn't taste right. I had the same problem at home not a couple weeks ago. My water was, again, had too much stuff in it, and I was brewing the coffee that I usually brew here, and it just tasted awful.
Yeah.
And if you try to do that at home, it's sometimes a little hard, but if you have the right things in place, like I bought a water filter for my tap, all of a sudden my coffee starts to taste a lot better.
And if you're curious about really how to achieve that great brew at home, you can go back and listen to our manual brewing episodes. We've mentioned several different kinds of acidity in this episode. You can go back and listen to our episode on tasting notes, colon, acidities. At the end of the day, we hope we're helping you brew better. One final thing to wrap up the dark coffee, which I think I said that about 10 minutes ago. My brother is in town right now. He's 20. He's a very sensitive taster. But he grew up saying, "I don't like coffee." Like, he's tried it a billion times. He likes lattes that are sweeter, but he doesn't like black coffee. And I said, "Well, I want to brew something for you, because I imagine you don't like the coffee you've had," which there's not a lot of specialty coffee in Texas, so it's been, weak, old, pre-ground, dark-roasted coffee. I want you to try this and let me know what you think. So I brewed that Las Lunas and Yellow Couture natural blend for him yesterday. He came into work with me. It was like bring your brother to work day, kind of weird, but whatever. And I said, "Yeah, what do you think of that?" And it's not his jam, but he's like, "This is way better. Like, I don't know if I drink it every day, but it's completely different. Like, it doesn't taste like coffee." And that's true. Like, coffee that's roasted well in a light way that's brewed correctly doesn't taste like the coffee you grew up with, and it will utterly blow your mind. It blew his mind. I don't know if he'll end up becoming really a specialty coffee geek, but at least he's gotten that exposure. And I think if you open yourself up to that exposure, you'll be blown away as well.
So to wrap it up, if you have any burning questions about coffee or you want us to talk about a different topic, shoot us an email at podcast@stonecreekcoffee.com or reach out to us on social media. You can reach out to us on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. You can find us at Stone Creek Coffee. Also, go to our website, www.stonecreekcoffee.com. If you're interested in checking out some of the other podcasts we talked about acidity, we talked about manual brew. We talked about a lot of good things. We don't actually remember what number podcasts we're on. We're getting to that point. So reach out. Let us know what you're thinking of about our podcast, or if you got any burning questions about coffee. We tend to turn around questions pretty quickly via email if you got anything. And, Drew, what are we talking about next time?
In 2 weeks, we're going to talk about coffee and food pairings. A year ago, around Thanksgiving, we released specially labeled classic series coffees. We actually paired different kinds of pie to the coffee. People didn't really catch on, but it was fun. It's good exercise. And it's a big deal to pair your food with wine. I went to an Italian restaurant a while back, and they had a wine recommendation for every single thing on the menu, which is pretty dope. But coffee is just as variable. There's as much variance in coffee as there is in wine, and there's a lot of the same properties. Like, coffee can pair awesome with food if you sort of take the time to do it. So this is going to be a really kind of edgy episode. We're going to live on that cutting edge of coffee for a little while and talk about how coffee can be paired with food to give you that optimal experience for both food and coffee. So that should be totally fun. We're going to try some more things, talk about what we're tasting, and hopefully you're inspired to try out a few new things as well. So we'll catch you in 2 weeks. Till then, we are geeks.
And we are talking coffee.